All right. The lesson here on riches and poverty, we're going to start this evening. Probably won't be able to finish it tonight. We'll be able to, I hope, finish it then a week from tonight. That'll be our final class on Proverbs. We're going to then go and change the pattern or plan that we had. And we'll be studying from 1st, 2nd Timothy and Titus until the first class that we have in September. Hopefully at that time, the elders and us are working together on some plans regarding classes. And we'll be having a new type of class, I hope, fully ready to start then on the 1st of September. Okay, in the lesson that we have tonight on the lesson of riches and poverty, the introduction there, problems associated with money and possessions have always been present and will continue as long as this world continues. The Proverbs give timeless advice on materialism, covetousness, poverty, deprivation, liberality, and greed. Let us learn and apply the wisdom given in those subjects. When you look at a world that has this problem and always has had this problem, you look at different places and you don't see an absence of the problem of the difficulty in riches and poverty. Someone's in that category there. But you do see a difference in the degree of it many times, I think, as we look at it. When we think about this from our perspective as 21st century Americans, what's the main problem that comes that most of us are familiar with? Most of us not facing very deep poverty, are we? Where's the problem come about in practical sense to us? All right, the rich is there. The problem of covetousness or greed or some of those things, the materialistic way of this society is very obvious. It's something that you don't notice in many cases of the problem of how materialistic our society is. And do you go to a place where they're without that materialism, where they're without much of anything, even the necessities of life? So we see it from a different perspective that someone else might. But we need to remember, it doesn't matter how much we have, there's still a problem with greed. A rich person can be greedy, and a poor person can be greedy. Both of them have that same kind of a problem when it's there that may exist, and we need to look at that. It may be from different avenues, but there is the same basic problems that are going to be present. So what we want to do is start out with the character of riches and look at that just a little bit. Will somebody take chapter 10, verse 15, please? Who will take that one? Larry? Chapter 11, verse 28. Who will have that ready? Okay, Colby. Chapter 18, verse 11. DJ. And chapter 23, verses 4 and 5. Okay, Kim. All right, chapter 10, verse 15, getting to the point of riches can have a destructive sense about them or a good sense about them. There are several going to be along this line that we look at here. First one, chapter 10, verse 15. So in that sense, the riches are being looked at in a positive sense, right? What does it mean it's a strong city? A strong city was for what purpose?
Well, it's a figure of speech. It's like a strong city.
Okay. All right. Do what?
Security.
All right. Security, it's a protection that is there. Finds himself with some protective level. In what way? Practically, how would that happen?
Well, it gives you some security having riches.
Okay.
I always like what W.C. Fields said. He said, I've been rich and I've been poor.
The idea that there is there of riches, are we going to usually be tempted to go out and steal to get by when we have wealth? No. So there's something that helps in that sort of way. It provides for maybe the doing of some things that need to be done, the buying of study aids, all kinds of things that you can look at that would be helpful in that sort of a sense. So it can be a strong city in that way. Go ahead, Eric.
I remember Dexter Dickey used to describe it this way. Money's not everything, but it sure does help out a lot.
Yeah. It's not everything, but it's something. That something may change from time to time. All right, now, chapter 11, verse 20, on the deceitfulness of riches. While it may be a protection, we need to look at that as well. 11, verse 28. Who had that, Kobe?
He who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like foliage.
Okay. That point of that they trust in his riches. What does that mean, to trust in the riches? Not anything of a problem in the wealth itself, but what's the difference about that trust part in riches?
They put their reliance and lean on it almost. As long as their finances are good, they like it.
All right. Usually in the New Testament, the word trust or faith are from the same original word, pistis. And that's the idea, dependence on something, a trust. Reliance upon this as being that which is dependable in itself. Riches are not dependable. We cannot depend on them to always be present. Have you ever known a rags to riches story? Yeah, I've known some of those. You ever known a riches to rags story? I've known even more of those. And so you have those kind of things pointed out. We'll get to another passage along that line in just a minute. 18, verse 11. Who had that one? DJ, this sounds a lot like 10:15 starting out. Go ahead.
The rich man's wealth is in his strong city, and like a high wall in his own esteem.
Okay. When you have that same statement, his wealth is as a strong city, or is his strong city, again, the protectiveness of that. But it's like a high wall in his own esteem. Meaning what? His own esteem of that.
They can be taken away. We see what happened to Job in one day. Lost everything in one day. That can happen to any rich person.
But a rich person who says, I think I'm fine. Look how much I've got. He's esteeming that to be something of a protection that it may not really be. It may be something that's not present. You remember, when I think about high walls, my mind automatically goes to Babylon. That's what Babylon's thought was. That's the point that's made about Babylon in both Isaiah and also in the book of Ezekiel. That they had these walls that they thought were their protection, their stronghold. They were impregnable. There wasn't any way they could be overcome. But turned out that they were in a drunken feast. The river was rerouted and the people went in. Despite those strong walls, they're still standing under all that dirt over there. But despite all that, in came the Medo-Persians and killed them. They were able to bring that powerful empire to an end. Anything else there? Okay, next one is 23, 4 and 5. All right. That's always been one of my favorite passages, verse 5, of the nature of wealth. And you live long enough and you see this, that someone has themselves the riches, they trust in that, and yet they take off very quickly. I have, I guess you would say, the ignominy, maybe, of having the 19th of October is my birthday. That's one of the biggest crashes on the stock market until That's become rather commonplace these days. But at that time, I saw several who had bought and sold on a margin. They were in paper, very wealthy, and a week or two later, they're paupers. And that was the point. Here you are. You think you've got everything. You are nice and wealthy, and yet some guys make a different decision in New York, and all of a sudden, you're busted. And that's the way that wealth is. It cannot be depended on as that which is absolute, like God can. Anybody else there? So there we have the nature of those riches, the character of them. Let's look at this next part. Riches are not everything. Well, I think we all know that. If they're ones that make themselves wings like an eagle and fly away, surely we would understand that. But let's look at these passages here under that main heading number 2. Who'll read 10:22, please? Okay, Kurt. And chapter 15, verses 16 and 17. Who'll read that? Okay, go ahead, Dallas. Kurt, go ahead.
Blessing of the Lord makes rich, and he who adds no sorrow with it. And he adds no sorrow with it.
Okay. So there the idea, what is of a more lasting nature than the earthly wealth? You have the Lord's blessings that are there, right? What are they like? Well, the point is, it makes one rich, but what? All right. It adds no sorrow there. It's something that's going to be without the problem that comes along. Have you ever known somebody who got rich and who wished they wouldn't have after a while? I've seen several times there be those who got that kind of wealth on a sudden basis. One of them was a real good friend of our family when I was growing up in the Panhandle of Texas. He had been a farmer here in Oklahoma, out in western Oklahoma, I believe. And they had oil, and all of a sudden he was wealthy. And I remember him talking to my dad, and I was there, and my brother and some others, and something about the wealth. And he says, well, boys, it really sounds good. But you know what? There are problems with it, too. And I looked at him like, what possible problem could you have? Beautiful home, everything else. He said, you know, when I got rich, I had a whole lot more relatives than I thought I did. And, you know, everybody in the world coming out of the woodwork. Well, you recognize those kind of things. There's good and bad with regard to that. The blessings of the Lord are without the bad. The point is, His things that He blesses us with are for our good, and it's going to be helpful in that. But, all right, chapter 15, verses 16 and 17. All right. Is it obvious sometimes that when we see people who have great wealth, they also have great problems in their family? I've always noticed something. The first generation that gets those riches, that earns them, that gets them because they've done something that is productive in nature, usually doesn't ruin them, by and large. Second generation, as worthless as can possibly be many times, because it's all come easily to them. They didn't do anything. They just got all of these things that they're receiving. That's the point that's here. It's better to have a little with the fear of the Lord. In other words, to have your concentration on spiritual things than great trouble with than great treasures with trouble, or better to have little to eat than have a lot and have these problems all around. Jason, did you have something back there?
Before, I was just thinking about the articles that you read about the lottery winners. I'm sure everybody's seen those, where people
I saw something. I've forgotten what it was. Some athlete settled with the management for only $86 million a year. He wanted more than that, but he settled for $86 million. And I thought, you know, what in the world? But what you notice is those guys retire after a few years, and what do they got? Nothing. Many of them. Why? Typically, when you start making a lot, you live like you're making a lot, and you live beyond your means. And typically what happens in that is that you just grow in the kind of debts that you have and everything else. There isn't a wisdom that goes along with that and recognizes this is something that I need to live in as small a way as possible and go on. That doesn't usually happen when somebody is used to the wealth. It usually takes all of that plus some. All right, anybody else there? That next part, B, chapter 11, verse 16. Who wants that? Go ahead, Aaron. And then I guess I'm going to have to say Aaron, too, there. That's Aaron Calco. All right, 11:22. Okay, David. 11:16. Okay. What's the point of that side-by-side comparison? A gracious woman retains honor. How so? How does a gracious woman retain honor? It isn't given away. It's something that she continues to have.
Respect.
All right. Her graciousness has something to do with that, right? She's not bragging. She's not forward in that sort of a way. A gracious woman has that honor to start with. People respect her, and it's going to continue. Why? Because of her graciousness, that way that she is. The second part of it, but ruthless men retain riches. How's that so? That's right. They'll do anything. They'll kill. They'll do whatever they need to retain that wealth, that ruthlessness will be something that continues on in that way so that they continue to have that wealth at someone else's expense. 11:22, please.
Now the ring of gold in the swine's mouth, so is a lovely woman who lacks discretion.
Okay. That was one I was going to leave out, but I will go ahead and hit it here. I forgot about leaving that. What's the point about a ring of gold in a swine snout? Do you usually see a pig with a gold ring? Okay, it's a waste that's there. It's something that's out of place in that sort of a way. And he says, so is a lovely woman who lacks discretion. That you have this lovely woman. The word there is what comes into the wealth. The word lovely has a connotation, not explicit meaning, but the connotation of that has to do with lovely in the sense of one that is well-made, in the sense of has dresses or jewelry or whatever else that she's got in such a way that she has that appearance of some dignity or honor in that sort of way. And he says, so is a lovely woman, one made up like that, but if she doesn't have discretion, what's the point? She's going to show real quickly that she's not very honorable, isn't she? That's the idea. She's going to be one who's made to be in disdain very soon. All right. Anybody else there? Next one on chapter 13, verses 7 and 8. Who has that? John.
There is that maketh himself rich, yet hath nothing. There is that maketh himself poor, yet hath great riches. The ransom of a man's life are his riches, but the poor heareth not rebuke.
Okay. when you have someone that says who makes himself rich but has nothing, how's that so? Okay. He's not content, and therefore sometimes it would be in the physical sense he loses that. What else? Does anybody else have another translation that kind of gives a different tack on that one?
Pretends.
Go ahead.
Yeah, ESV says pretends.
Okay. That idea of one who pretends to be rich, that's what I thought was there in that. And yet he has nothing. In other words, it's just a kind of a putting himself out there to be something when he doesn't have that. One who makes himself poor, and I think that's the idea, that he makes himself appear as poor, and yet he has great riches. I'll never forget some of the people that I've known through life. One that was in Nacogdoches, Texas, always dressed in some worn-out overalls and drove a truck that I thought may have been with Noah in the ark. I wasn't sure. But, I mean, you talk about beat up and something that was old. That was it. And come to find out later on down the line that he was a multi-millionaire. Just had a lot. Well, I would never guessed it by the way that he lived. But you've seen the boat. You've seen the one that has nothing and lives like they're in extravagance. And that will last for a little while. And the other as one that is just being a common man. Anything else there? All right. Wisdom and understanding are more valuable than gold and silver. Let's look at that one. 16:16, please. Who's got that? Go ahead. And I'll give you the next one, Foster. 2015 for Foster. 28:11. Who wants to take that one? Okay, go ahead, Michael. All right. Proverbs 16, verse 16.
How much better to get wisdom than gold, and to get understanding is to be chosen rather than silver.
All right. Why? Why is that better, wisdom and understanding, of more value than the wealth? Okay. They go beyond this life. They may also be that which help us more in learning about God. That's the point that we made there at the start of the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 1 pointed out that fact, that wisdom and knowledge of God and a fear of Him were something that would help in an eternal sense with regard to our character. All right, 20 and verse 15, Foster. Okay. Those things, the gold, the rubies, the jewels of all that kind, they have a place and a worth. But it says, but the lips of knowledge are a precious jewel. The word precious simply means of the most valuable jewel. The highest in order of that is lips that are blessed with knowledge. That has same thing as we had talked about in the verse before. All right, 28:11, please.
The rich man is wise in his own eyes, but the poor who has understanding searches him out.
Okay. Who has a New American Standard Bible, NASB? Go ahead. Would you read that verse 28:11, please? Okay. That idea that he sees through him, I think the New American Standard has a better rendering of it in that. That's the concept of this. In a literal sense, it's an idiom that's there, but it's the concept of that one who has that kind of an understanding, he can see what he's really like. This rich man, he's wise as he thinks about it. But here's this man who has that understanding, that wisdom, and he looks at him, and he sees, well, he's really just one who's living on his wealth. He's not having that kind of a sense of discretion the way that he should. He can see the real character behind that. He's not won over just by the wealth that is pointed out. All right. Anybody else got anything there on that one? Okay. Next part down there. Poverty with integrity is better than riches with perverseness. Who wants to take 16:8? Anybody? Okay, Jason, and then 16:19, DJ, and 28:6. We'll take that, Dallas. Okay, 16:8.
Better is a little with righteousness than great income with injustice.
All right. Why is that so? Why is it better to have a little and be righteous rather than be very wealthy but without any justice involved in it? All right. You've got a point there. It's a matter where it's better to be in favor with God than with men or having anything like that. That's something of an eternal value about it. Okay, chapter 16 and verse 19. Okay. What does that mean to be of an humble spirit with the lowly? Kind of lowly. Those who are the lowly in life, as it's speaking of there, has to do with those who are among people who are without or with very little that might be present. If I'm humble of spirit and I'm with them, those who are downward in society's way of looking at it. Why is that better than to be up with the wealthy people and be one of the proud?
Well, God resists the proud.
Okay. That idea of when we look at pride twice and those things that we had looked at of what God hates are involved with that pride that's there. Go ahead, Scott.
If you're then whatever happens after that will just fall in place. If you have wisdom and understanding, and then you happen to be rich, you'll handle it. If you have wisdom and understanding, and you happen to be poor or somewhere in between, you'll handle that with the wisdom and understanding. You know,
and that fear of the Lord.
These always kind of put riches first, and then poorness first, and then the understanding part. Search understanding and wisdom, whichever one you are, you'll handle it just fine.
There's a way you can live in both of those properly. Okay. That last one, 28 verse 6. Dallas, did you have that one?
Better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than a rich man who is crooked in his way.
Okay. If you look at that who is crooked in his way, than one perverse in his ways, though he be rich. That idea of being crooked is the point, but in the literal sense, I want you to think about this for a minute. Literally, that says that he is perverse of two ways. Now, try to work your mind through. That's, again, one of those idioms. Perverse of two ways. You ever heard Indians said the white man speaks with forked tongue? What'd that mean? Okay. He says this one to one and what? Something else to the other. He's got two different minds. We've got those that have a mind toward God and a mind toward the world. The double-minded man, James says, is unstable in all his ways. Here you have something that is pointed out. Here's a person who's perverse of two ways. He's trying to do right and trying to do wrong all at the same time. Now, what's going to happen to him? Even if he's rich, he's not going to make it. When he's trying to go two different ways at the same time, that isn't going to help him. He's one who lacks the integrity that's talked about of that poor man, the first part of it, of verse 6. Better is the poor who walks in his integrity. He doesn't have integrity. He's going after two different directions at the same time. What's going to happen to him? He's going to fall. That's the nature of a double-minded person, or someone who's of a mind to do good and also of a mind to do evil. That's always going to fail in this life. Anything else there? Okay. Next part there in chapter 22 and verse 1. Who wants to take that? Okay, go ahead. Okay. What's a good name? All right, your reputation, what you're thought of. So how do you get a good name? Do what? Okay. Okay. If I have a reputation for this time, I've done things that were right, and there's a good name that's to be had in that. Why is that better than somebody who's just wealthy? Do what?
It gives things that you can't buy money.
Okay. How many of you have somebody that's really wealthy that you have the highest regard for in your life? That's the person you'd go to first. I sure don't. But you have somebody who's lived a long life and been a servant of God. Here's some elder among God's people, or an older preacher who's handled his life in such a way that he's one that's done right, or somebody in the local congregation that I've known that's faced hardships, all of these things, and they've got some wisdom about them because of a life of righteousness. I'm going to go to that person. Why? Because that's more valuable. That's something that can't be bought. It's something that also is of such a value that it's gained over time, that you've seen this, that there's an automatic response in that direction because of those that are good. You may be rich and absolutely worth nothing, and nobody had come to you for anything, not even to learn how you got rich, because sometimes you might have done it through hook and crook. But the idea of a name that is good, that's to be greatly desired. Church, you had something.
Yeah, it reminds me of 1 Peter 3:16. Live your life in such a way that those who revile you would be ashamed.
That's right. Go ahead, Jason. That's right. You've got those passages about that a great number of times through the book of Proverbs. Go ahead.
That verse really makes me think of it's a wonderful life. Look at George Bailey, looking at his life as a strong.
Yeah.
You have a good reputation, everybody comes, you know.
That's right.
With a good reputation.
Yeah.
And like you said,
okay. Anybody else get a little Hollywood reference tonight? Go ahead, John.
So this, having a good name reminds me today of, Bernie Madoff died. Had the biggest Ponzi scheme in history. He was very wealthy and basically, stole billions of dollars. But in doing that, he ruined his kids' lives.
Yeah.
I mean, that name, they have his last name.
Fact of it, now I'm quite sure he wouldn't feel like he'd made a good trade. All right, anybody else? Okay. When you look at those points, that riches are not everything, the next one then has to do with sharing our earthly possessions. That if we have that, bit of wealth, then certainly it ought to be something that we would be ready to use to help others as well. Let's look at these passages. Okay, we'll try to cover this one point before we end. Proverbs 11, 24 and 25. Who'll take that? Art? Okay. And Proverbs 18, verse 16. Go ahead, Tyler. And 19, verse 6, Colby. Okay, 11, 24 and 25, please. Okay. The term that's used there is a quite common Hebrew term. There is one who scatters. What does that mean, to scatter? What's that a reference to? Do what? Okay. Same thing as in the parable of the sower. He scattered the seed. In other words, he gives to others. That's talking about one who is benevolent, yet he increases. There's one who holds more than is right, yet what happens to him? He goes into poverty. You ever notice that happening? Sometimes people get what they deserve in this life. And if they're helping others, then they're ones who are helped in their time of need as well. There's others who try to hold that all to themselves and be a miser, and yet in the part of that, they end up not receiving anything or not having anything in their time of need. The point of the next one then, the same way. The generous soul will be made rich. Is that talking about rich physically? Probably not. When you have that sense, look at the parallel to it. The generous soul will be made rich, and he who waters will be watered himself. I don't think anybody's going to go water anybody literally either, do you? The idea of that is that this one who gives to others, they'll receive as well in that effort. Okay, 18:16. Okay. How's that so? A man's gifts make room for him. How does that happen? Somebody's very benevolent. They help. They give to others. They give to things that are a good cause. How's that going to make room for him?
He sits in the political system all the time.
Okay. Yeah, we don't want to follow that one. But well, that's true. That's called bribes there.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tyler. Okay.
And I think that God has created within us, within our nature, this feeling of joy when we give whatever it is, whether it's finances, you know, money, yeah, or time. But when we have the attitude of giving in any realm, I think there is something within us physically that happens that makes us feel good.
When you look at what Paul said, quoting Jesus, it's more blessed to what? Give than receive. That word blessed is the idea not necessarily so much of happy as the contentment. And I think there's the sense that it comes in. That all of us, if we're decent at all and having a sense of help to others, we'd rather see our kids happy We'd rather see our kids in some way prosper than ourselves. There's that sense of that greater good that is done there. The same thing goes with others as well. When our attitude is toward being that servant, as Tyler pointed out, toward giving, then there's a blessing that comes with that in the very nature of it. We're happy when we see that good being done. Go ahead.
We live in a society of let's do right. My dad called them do-gooders, you know, and you see it all over the internet and Facebook, I'm sure, and all that. And if they ever interview these people, all they can talk about is how good it makes them feel to give this person a gift, a donation, yeah, whatever it might be. How about just doing it because it's right?
That's right.
You know, not how you feel about it. I mean, you
and that's what,
it happily,
yeah,
just do it because it's right.
This is not covering that point. It's covering the point that if I'm going to give, that likely is going to put me in good stead, mm-hmm, with others. But exactly, I need to do that because it's what's right to do. We had an elder where I was in Alvin, Texas, and I always, the two elders with me the whole time there, I was a young guy, and they were wise. They helped me in a lot of ways. What's lacking in wisdom with me isn't their fault. They had plenty. But one of them would always say, I've heard it said, give until you hurt. And he says, nope, if you just give until you hurt, you hadn't given enough. Keep on giving until you feel good about it. And I think that's true. When you look at the idea of the sense that here's this person who wants to have that giving, not just out of a, I hate to give this away. That's not going to be of any favorable sense. But when we truly have that mind that we would rather give that to someone than to have it ourselves, that's where you're going to recognize the good that comes in character and the blessedness that's talked about by Paul. Do you have something? Go ahead, Larry.
I was going to say, in both the Bible and in the world, there's nobody that's churlish is ever admired, is ever looked at favorably.
Okay.
And other people, the people that are generous and people that are giving, they're always have a great admiration.
All right. Good point. Okay. 19:6.
Many entreat the favor of the nobility, and every man is a friend to one who gives gifts.
Okay. That entreating the favor of the nobility literally. One of noble birth or a prince, in other words, royalty, that people will entreat royalty because they have that opportunity or that place of bestowing what's wanted by the citizenry. It says, and every man is a friend of one who, what? Gives gifts. So there's something kind of like a nobility in this person out there who's giving to others, who has this kind of a benevolent kind, that we would expect that from the nobility or those who are of royalty, that they would act in favor of their domain. But here is someone as well who's looked at in a higher esteem. Why? Because he's more benevolent, that he gives. And in that way, he comes to be like those who are of a higher esteem and nobility. Okay, anybody else got anything there? All right, I'm going to stop at that point. We're going to take up then with number 3B, and we'll finish down through all of these points. We got about halfway, a little bit further than I thought we would tonight, really. And we'll try to finish that all out next time, and I'll have the sheets in the back for the text and then the notes to the side, starting out in 1 Timothy as well as an introduction to 1 Timothy next Wednesday night, Lord willing. Okay, we're going to go to God in a word of prayer, and Rick, I think you're the one who will lead us.